Amen. All right, if you guys want to go Matthew 25, that is where we will be today, Matthew 25. If you're on your phone and you like to read the same kind of translation as I'm in the CSB, and we're going to be 25, verse 14. This is a story that Jesus tells not only his disciples, but all listening. And it starts like this in verse 14. For it is just like a man about to go on a journey. He called his own servants and entrusted, that's a key word for us today, entrusted, his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent. Depending on each one's ability. Then he went on a journey. Here's another key word. Immediately, the man who had received 5 talents went and put them to work and earned 5 more. In the same way, the man with 2 earned 2 more. But the man who had received 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. And after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. The man who had received 5 talents approached, presented 5 more talents, and said, Master, you gave me 5 talents. See, I've earned 5 more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Now share in your master's joy. The man with 2 talents also approached. He said, Master, you gave me 2 talents. See, I've earned 2 more talents. His master said, similar. Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will put you in charge of many. Share your master's joy. The man who had received 1 talent also approached and said, Master, I know you. You're a harsh man. Reaping where you haven't sown, gathering where you haven't scattered seed. And so I was afraid and went off and hid your talent in the ground. See, have what is yours. His master replied to him, You evil, lazy servant. If you knew that I reap where I haven't sown and gathered where I haven't scattered, then you should have at least deposited my money with the bankers, and I would have received my money back. With interest when I returned. So take the talent from him, give it to the one who has 10 talents, for to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have more than enough. But from the one who does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. And throw this good for nothing servant into the outer darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. All right. Interesting story, yeah. Now, okay, so let's look at the first verse here. For it is just like a man. What's just like a man? Okay, so we have to back up. Look back at the very first verse of this whole chapter. Here's what Jesus started this teaching block with. He says, at that time, the kingdom of heaven will be like, and then he goes into his parable. So this is a continuation of that same line of thought. This is what he's been doing for 2 chapters, talking about the end of the age, when he comes back, what's it going to look like? He kind of answers that question, but more than answer the question of what it will look like, he actually calls us over and over and over to be faithful and to be ready. He's less concerned with what it looks like. He's more concerned with what we look like as we wait. That's what this is about. That's what this whole story is about how you and I steward our lives in such a way that we believe Christ will come back at some point, and at some level, we will give some kind of account about how we've spent whatever this talent thing is. Here's what I know, and I know it because in my own time of prayer and meditation over this text and just trying to ask God, Lord, what would you have for us? I mean, there's a million different ways to approach this parable. Here's what came to me. I'm upstairs. You guys know where the couch is by the elevator? It's like the quietest place, unless they're vacuuming, the quietest place in this church. And I'm up there, I'm sitting, I'm praying over this text, and immediately what hits me is, how am I supposed to add more to my life? Like, I want to be a good steward. I want to spend my life well for the gospel, for the kingdom, but I just feel busy, man. You felt that? Where you're like, how am I supposed to vacuum, do my laundry, work a lot, eat salad, try to go work out, text everyone back, email everyone back, pay the bills, clean up my cat's poop, like all this different stuff, you know? You can't just jettison all your responsibilities. We're busy. We live in a busy and tired age. So what does it look like for us to live in this place, can't jettison our responsibilities? What does it look like for us to steward ourselves, steward our lives well in a tired and busy age? That's the approach I want to have with this text. Because it's not just like, hey, be a good steward, don't be a bad steward, see you next week. It's a little more complex than that at times. So here's what we're going to try to do. What does it look like for us to have an attainable vision of good and godly stewardship in our lives? I got in a really deep YouTube hole the other day where I just got on this kick of watching these morning routine videos. Y'all ever seen those? Aesthetically pleasing, but totally unrealistic. So here's one I saw. This is this guy. His alarm goes off. Somehow he's already filming when his alarm went off. 4:30, beep, beep, beep. He doesn't even snooze. He just, boom, gets up, which is already different than me. gets up, 4:30, shuts his alarm off, opens his blinds, sits for 15 minutes in meditation. I was like, man, this guy's crazy. Goes and does, and I'm not knocking skincare routine, but this guy did a 30-minute skincare routine, okay? Then he did the thing where he puts ice in a bowl, pours water, puts his face in there, and then he goes on a 4-mile run. Then he comes back, and he makes the most beautiful omelet I've ever seen. And then he goes to the gym to work out for an hour. Then he comes back, and I guess he's a Christian because he opens his Bible and watches a whole sermon. Then he goes and showers. Then he does yoga. And then it's 8 a.m., and his day's about to start. I remember watching that and being like, I'm lucky to hit snooze 3 times, make a K-cup, and get out of the house. Like, that is unattainable to me. Maybe that's not you, but that for me, that's crazy. What does it look like for us not to just build this totally unrealistic expectation of what it looks like to steward our lives well, but have an attainable one? That's what we want to do. So here's what we're going to answer. We're going to answer, what does stewardship look like biblically from this text? We're going to look at, why is it difficult for us at times to steward well? Then third, we'll look at some real practical examples, and then we'll end with motivations for stewardship. So first, what is stewardship? Look at verse 14 again. For it is just like a man about to go on a journey. He called his own servants, and here's that key word again, entrusted or stewarded his possessions to them. He gave up his stewardship to them, for them to delegate, for them to use whatever these talent things are, for his sake. What does it look like to be faithful with our talents? I don't think any of you in here are historical Roman experts, so I'll just give you a little tip here. Talent, in the historical Roman understanding, was about 75 pounds of silver. It was a way of marking their wealth. And a talent was actually about equal to 20 years of wages. 20 years of wages, just one. So five. I mean, the guy that gets 5 talents, he's got a lifetime of just normal, kind of average wages. Like, that's more money than he'll see the rest of his life. And here this master is, he's got all this wealth, and he deposits a little bit with this guy, a little bit with this guy, a little bit with this guy. And he entrusts them with it. It's not theirs. It's his, right? It's like, it says it, his possessions. It wasn't uncommon for we would use the term boss, they used the term master in that time, to delegate, when they would go on trips, their whole estate to their servants. So here's a picture. So, people listening to this, they would have totally understood, Oh yeah, that happens all the time. They might even be some of the servants. I mean, just picture this. Like, put yourself in their shoes. Here you are before your boss, and they say, hey, worker, I'm going to go on a trip. I'm not even going to tell you when I'm coming back. But here is more money than I will ever pay you. And my expectation of you is that you use this well, that you spend this well, because I'm going to come back. And I have some kind of expectation that you will work with these talents, work with this money that is mine. It's not yours, it's mine. See ya. Do you think you would feel some level of responsibility? Like, you respect this person. They pay your paycheck. They put food on your table. Would you feel some level of, okay, I don't want to disappoint this person, and actually they've entrusted me tremendous amounts of wealth, tremendous amounts, for me to spend thoughtfully and well so that when they come back, I can prove, hey, I did something. So this is what they're considering as they hear this story. But what about for us in this life? What is a talent for us supposed to look like? If we have this view of this teaching, okay, Jesus is the master. He's given us all these different things. He's asking us to spend them well, to steward them well in this life. What could it look like? I made a little grid for us. I think they'll put it up there. Okay, so on the left side, we have talents to spend. This is time and energy, abilities and gifts, resources and finances, and your story, which includes your pain and your past. These are just some broad categories for us to begin to think through. What is a talent for me in this present age look like? Time and energy, abilities, gifts, resources, finances, and your story. These are things in all of our lives that we have the ability to spend on ourselves, on others, for our kingdom, for our master's kingdom. And not only that, but we have places we can spend them in. We can spend them on our body and our health. Relaxation, which I hope you hear this, is not bad. Work and chores, spiritual life and church, and then relationships and family. So these are some just broad categories to help us think through what is a talent for us and where can we spend it. So here's a definition of stewardship. How we use our time, our gifts, resources, and stories to benefit others and glorify God. So there's our working definition. Stewardship is how we use our time, our gifts, our resources, and our stories to benefit others and glorify God. I got this out of 1 Peter 4:10, which says, each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace. So I just invite you to consider for a second. I don't know what talents you think you have. I don't know what kind of categories you think you have in your life to spend them in. But just for a split second, do you ever even give thought to you have talents and places to spend them? And you can choose to spend them on yourself, or you can choose to spend them for the sake of others and the glory of your master. That's what this text is lifting up for us. What does it look like for us to think, to pray, to meditate, to even ask God, God, how would you have me spend my time, my energy, my gifts, my abilities, my resources, and even parts of my story for the sake of other people and to glorify you? Okay, we're tracking. We're okay. Why can we struggle? Why can we struggle with stewardship? Let's look at the unfaithful servant for a second, and I think it'll uncover for us some areas we might struggle in, and then it'll give us a little bit of help on diagnosing. Look at verse 18 with me. But the man who had received one talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. Okay, do you think this servant meant well? Okay, one person said yes. I mean, when I first read this, even I already knew the story, but when I first read it, my first thought was like, I wonder, like, did he really think God would be, or the master would be happy with him? Maybe, was he just really nervous? Like, I don't want to lose my master's money, so I'm just going to play the safe option. Was he just trying to protect? There's a lot of opinions. As you probably well know, one verse in the Bible probably has like 20 different interpretations, but here's just mine, okay? You can disagree, but here's mine. I don't think that's what the servant is doing. I don't think he's necessarily nervous about, oh, if I lose it all, my master's going to be upset with me. I don't think he's trying to protect it. I actually think he's just lazy. And I'll tell you why. I'll point to the text. Look at 24. Here's the interaction between the servant and the master. The man who had received one talent also approached and said, "Master, I know you." And then he goes off on this list about how he's harsh, how he is kind of shrewd in his business. And then look at 25. "I was afraid," so he's saying he's afraid, "and went off and hid your talent in the ground, and then here, have what is yours." And then here's the master's response. And remember, this is a story Jesus is telling to unearth things in us so that we would be thoughtful about, oh, how would I have responded in that situation? Here's the master's response. "You evil," and what's the second word? "Lazy servant." And then he goes on this thing. "If you knew, if you thought I was actually harsh and I was very shrewd and I would have been really mad had you actually lost all my money, the faithful thing for you to do would have been what? At least give it to the banker and make like whatever the interest rate is today, 0.2%. Like that takes, there's no risk in that. So if you're really nervous, this is what I think the master's saying. If you're really nervous that you were going to lose it all, you could have taken the most safe option, which is just give it to the banker. Here's another question. Okay, so immediately the two guys go and start working and dealing their talents. This guy goes and digs a hole, puts it in, fills it up. What does he do with the rest of his time? Because if he was nervous about pleasing his master, but nervous to lose it all, he could have dug a hole, done it, and then gone and done some work and at least gained like half a talent, right? So that's a long way to say, I don't think this servant is just scared. I think, at least in interpretation, is he's just selfish. He's selfish. What can that look like for us? There's this lazy, busy spectrum you can build with selfishness. Because selfishness is just self-absorption. It's indulgence, and my comfort matters more than anyone else. And so maybe on one side, we have laziness. Laziness. It's not spending your talents out of a selfish desire. So for whatever reason, it's us deciding, I'm not going to spend my talents. I'm just going to do whatever's easy, whatever's comfortable, whatever is the least difficult. Laziness is a prolonged avoidance of responsibilities and duties flowing from self-centeredness. Okay, I'm going to talk to myself here. I'm going to include myself in this category because I can see at times parts of my life where laziness seems to creep in. Some of us, again, including myself, some of us are bad stewards of our lives because we are lazy. Because the filter we make all decisions through is what is easiest, what is most comfortable, and what requires the least amount of effort. That is a terrible stewardship framework. It's not a helpful one, but I can see it in my life at times. Can you see it in yours? And if we want to be good stewards, we must see that our lives are not primarily about us. You and I are not owners of our lives. And I know the cultural air will get you to believe that you actually are. But if you consider the scriptures, they say you were not the creator, you were created. And all the talents you have in your life, you might have cultivated some of them, but all of them were given to you. There was no menu screen when you were born about which kind of talent do you want, because I would have chosen a little taller, please. What you have in your life has been given to you, just like the story. It isn't yours. And listen, I'm not saying it's bad to like watch some TV here and there and to play some games and to go enjoy some good breadsticks at Olive Garden. Relax and enjoy life, man. It is okay. But on the other side of that, the totality of your life, is it for you or is it for others and the glory of God? That's what stewardship is, to consider that. On the other side, so laziness on this side, am I doing that right? Oh, laziness on this side, busyness on this side. What is busyness? Busyness is spending too many talents in the wrong areas for the wrong reasons. Here's an example. Let's say, hypothetically, I'm preaching this weekend, and I spend all my talents, all my time, all my energy, all my emotional capacity on this sermon, and when I get home, I've got nothing left. Nothing left for my wife, nothing left to help with chores, nothing left for my own spiritual life. Okay, I feel this at times, because this is ministry and this is good work. Am I a good steward if I spend myself completely at work and come home with nothing left? I'm a bad steward. I'm a bad steward. And so again, what it looks like for us to consider, what kind of side of the spectrum do you think you lean most naturally? And to consider, am I lazy in areas? Am I too busy in areas? And actually what I end up doing is spending all my talents at work, and then when I get home, I've got nothing left to give. I spend all my talents on my hobbies, and then when it's time for me to read my scriptures and to commune with God, I've got nothing left. We fall, maybe on both categories, but usually we kind of slide to one or the other. Are you like the third servant? And what resonates most loudly in your heart at times is selfishness, leaning towards laziness, leaning towards busyness. Both are rooted in self. And just like the unfaithful servant, what we end up doing is just burying what God has asked us to steward because we think we own it. So again, it's not bad to enjoy life. It's not bad to rest, watch a little TV, play some games, enjoy time with friends. But we must consider, if we want to be good stewards, how are you spending it? How are you spending your life? Primarily for yourself or for the benefit of others and the glory of your Father? And this is where it gets complex, right? Okay, we're going to return back now to the attainable aspect of what we started with. Can you spend 100% of your talents in 100% of those categories? No. So it takes some wisdom, it takes some prayer, some meditation on, okay, here's what I've got, here's my categories. God, how am I supposed to spend these well? Sometimes it means, so if I go back to myself, for example, sometimes it means good stewardship is me coming here with a self-acclaimed A-plus sermon. And sometimes good stewardship is me coming with a C-plus sermon and time spent with my family. We got to play this dance where we try to learn, where we try to figure out what is wise for me to spend my talents in some areas and keep a little bit for some other areas.
It takes wisdom.
And it takes meditation. Okay, what does faithful stewardship look like? We've looked at kind of what stewardship is in this broad category. We've looked at some ways we can fall into some pitfalls. What does faithful stewardship look like? Look at verse 14 again. For it's just like a man about to go on a journey, called his own servants and entrusted his possessions to them. Okay, two big keywords here. His own servants and entrusted. He called his own servants. And what does the text say about these two faithful stewards? What's the word before they go? Immediately they get to work. Immediately they get to work. So the one with five went and put it to work, and the same with the man with two. But the last one, he went off and hid his master's money. See what the text is doing here? And this is kind of classic Jesus in his parables. And this is classic wisdom literature in the scriptures. They offer two pictures, and it invites us to compare and contrast the two. So one, evil guy, goes, buries, selfish. Who knows what he did, but he didn't work for his master. And then the other two, this picture of faithfulness, immediately get to work. How do we get that ambition? I mean, is that just something you kind of cultivate in yourself? Is that something you just wake up one morning, you watched one YouTube morning routine, and boom, 4:30, that's you? How do we get this kind of godly ambition for the kingdom? I think at least one way is to understand what the two servants understood. I have a master. And maybe that sounds kind of harsh or like too hierarchical for our modern ear. So here's a better one. You have a father who loves you but expects something of you. They understood that they are but servants to their master, and what they have is not theirs to spend for themselves, but their master has entrusted them to go and multiply what they've been given. Here's the key. Servants care about their master's assignment. Servants care about their master's assignment. Do you care? Do you even know that God actually has a desire that you spend your life well for the benefit of others and the glory of Him? If you don't, then this will just be like, you feel kind of guilty, you go out later and you try and muster up some work ethic, and then it fades tomorrow. How do we get something that's lasting? We consider, I have a master. And unlike whatever the third servant thinks, he's actually not as harsh as you believe. I mean, consider his response to the faithful servants. Well done, my good and faithful servant. Enter into what? My joy. So here's what it looks like for us. To consider that our life is actually far more short than we believe, and eternity is far longer than we can even comprehend. And what you're doing in this life will reverberate in that one. I think that's a movie quote somewhere. Do you sense this? This life is short, man. Like, it really is. And I know we got some young people in the room, and I am included in that. Like, it's hard for us at times to even think, man, my life will end one day, and I will stand before God. But we will. Like, we will. It ends one day. You and I will stand before our Father, and He will at some level ask, what did you do with it? What did you do with it? Was it primarily about you, or did you try? Did you at least try to spend it for others, for the benefit of others? Your time is a gift, and it is not your own. Your gifts, you may have cultivated some, but they aren't only for your benefit. Could we have the heart of these two faithful servants where we open our hands to our master, he deposits talents in, and we say, we will take good care of this. That's what it looks like for us to steward our lives well. Okay, so kind of broad, what does it actually look like? What can it actually look like for us in our lives? How do we begin? First, it requires us to recognize none of these people got unlimited talents. Like, they all have some kind of cap on them, right? Even the five-talent guy only got five. And so this is the dance you've got to figure out in your life. How do you spend the talents you have well? Okay, here, please listen to me, because we all will fall into this trap. It's important for you to steward the talents you have. Not that you wish you had. Not that you think you have, not that you compare yourself to this person and they kind of seem like a five-talent guy, but maybe you're just like a two-talent guy. What do you have? And the reason this is so important is because as you go through your life, from, like, consider middle schoolers to college students to young adults to people who are married to people with kids and then retirement, in all of those different segments of life, your capacity is very different, isn't it? Like, if you're trying to keep some kids alive, like, that's most of your capacity, isn't it? Maybe it's all of your capacity. If you've got a loved one who's sick and you're a primary caregiver, like, that's a lot of your capacity. And so for you to think, oh man, when I was in college, I had so much time, and if I feel guilty now because I don't get to do it like I used to. Again, steward where you are. Steward the capacity you have today. Does God care how much they make? It seemed to be that he cared most that they were just faithful with what he had given them. Be faithful with what you have. And if you're in a season of life where maybe grief is strong, it is okay for you to say, my capacity is a little smaller than it used to be. And Christ is not asking you to steward something you don't have in this season. And that should be freeing for us, not burdensome. Okay, so here's some just real practical examples, and then we'll get out of here. Work. What does it look like for me to steward my life well at my place of work? Whether you're an accountant, whether you're a teacher, maybe you're a stay-at-home mom, maybe you're a doctor. What does it look like? First, it helps us to remember all work, all kinds of work, is important. If our lives are to be spent to benefit other people, all of our jobs at some base level benefit other people. And so it's actually good that we work. Here's a thought experiment. What's more important? People that come up here, stand behind this thing and preach, or someone who makes sandwiches at Subway? Which one's more important? Depends on how hungry you are, maybe. Y'all are right now saying, the Subway guy, get us out of here. It depends on the heart. Because I could come up here and just have the most selfish motivations and do this thing, and the guy at Subway could be like, I play a part in God's call to steward my life well and to benefit others, and so I'm going to make the best Italian BMT for you that I can. Your job is not more or less important. It is your heart in it. And for especially people who feel like, man, my job is annoying, is mundane, I want to do something more meaningful, nothing wrong with trying to find something that feels to you more meaningful, but you can make your job meaningful. Your coworkers. Do you see your coworkers as a God-ordained person for you to sacrifice for? Even the guy who chews his ice real loud on the cubicle next to you. The people that God has surrounded you with, that is a calling, a place for you to steward your time, your talents, your energy, your love. Do you pray for them? You don't have to be like awkward about it. Maybe when you drive to work, you just say a prayer for the two guys you really enjoy at work. Do you practice what's called breadcrumb evangelism? Where when someone asks you, hey Josh, how was your weekend? Oh man, it was good. Went to see the F1 movie. I don't remember what else we did this weekend. had some good food. And then I went to church on Sunday and it was actually really good. I'd been feeling kind of anxious before and for whatever reason, I just felt a bit of peace when I left. How was your weekend? Okay. No huge gospel explanation, no like big thing, just a little breadcrumb of spirituality put on the ground. You never know what that person will take from that, chew on, and come back to you later with. Your place of work is for years you to steward well. What about spiritual in church? We want to be careful not to compartmentalize our spiritual lives and church lives from real life. Actually, good stewardship is how you integrate your faith into all segments of your life. But some of us have been spending all our talents in all the other categories other than our spiritual life. And so maybe for you, what it looks like to be a good steward of your life is to consider, what do I need to say no to so I can put a little bit more energy into my spiritual life? Maybe TV, entertainment, has gotten too big of a hold on your evening rhythm, and what it looks like for you is to watch half of what you would have done on TV and spend a little more time with the Lord. What about relationships and family? Again, you can't give everything to every area, but do you see your family, whether you're married or not? You got siblings, you got parents, grandparents. Do you see your family as a primary place of stewardship and to give them time and emotional connection? Prayers, love, presence is part of your stewardship. Stewardship isn't just at work or at church. It's how you work hard to love your family. When you get home from your responsibilities, is your time for you only? Again, take time to recharge. If you're an introvert, enjoy some alone time. But diligence at work and laziness with your family is bad stewardship. And it's what God would call us to repent of today. I got more, but we're running out of time. Do you see the point? We have to think, we have to consider, I've got these talents, I've got these segments of my life. What does it look like for me to steward it well? And it takes some wisdom, and it takes kind of a learning how to do that dance of What season am I in? Where do I put it? What do I do? But here's where we'll end. Can you think of anyone in the scriptures who, when they considered the endless amount of responsibility they have, pressure that is placed on them, and the amount of resources they have, chose every time not to be selfish, but to spend it for others and to glorify his Father? I mean, this is Jesus. If you want an example of a good steward, consider the life of Christ, who at every moment in his life, and you want to talk about a guy that had pressure on him. I mean, the stories we kind of water down a bit, like the pandemonium around him when he would enter cities is enormous. Crowds following him. Sometimes the only way he could get alone is get on a boat and go out into the middle of the lake. He's got pressure and responsibilities, demands on him that we do not understand. And yet he found a way to play this dance where he takes time alone, because he goes to the mountain by himself a lot, to spend time with his 12, his family, and to benefit others. Ultimately, on the cross, the most self-sacrificing place. What does it look like for us in our lives to embody that? What kind of world would that build? If everyone in this room goes out into their places of work, their families, where they enjoy their hobbies, and said, I'm going to work to benefit others and glorify my Father. You know what that is? It's what this whole thing started off with. The kingdom of heaven is like. Because as we go throughout our lives and try to love, try to serve, try to be patient, try to benefit others, try to glorify God, what we are doing is bringing in waves a bit of heaven down into where we are. And we're etching out this kingdom of heaven onto the kingdom of earth in small pockets here and there at your job, at my job, in your family, in my family. And as we do, we are bringing that down. Does that make sense? The parable ends kind of harshly with the last servant. Jesus, or the master, kind of calls him out, you lazy, wicked, blah, 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 and then says something about weeping and gnashing of teeth, which doesn't sound pleasant. What does all that mean? Okay, unfortunately, this is like it's in the negative, so that means I should shut up. But here's just like super short. It means we have to give an account. We are going to be held accountable for how we've spent our lives. At some point, you will stand before God, and he will say, what did you do with the talents I gave you? And then you'll look over your life. This doesn't nullify grace. This doesn't nullify forgiveness. This doesn't even mean this is some kind of works-based Christianity. It does mean that we will give an account, though. Do you see that in the text? And so it begs us, it sobers us up to consider, am I burying my talents, spending them on myself? Or am I working to benefit others and glorify God with the immense resources? So I ask you, are you burying what God has given? Or are you spending them well for the benefit of others and the glory of God? Let's pray. Lord, thank you for this text that has all of us examine. What does it look like for me with my talents, my capacities, and my season of life to spend it well? For those of us who feel like maybe we've been lazy or busy, sinfully busy, forgive us. Help us have a realistic pathway to repentance and what it looks like to consider our lives more deeply. For those of us who are just tired, I pray for your strength, that you would remind us again that we're to steward where we are today, not compare ourselves to others. And Lord, I pray that you would help all of us feel the sober reminder that we will stand before you one day. And you'll ask, did you spend it all on yourself or did you spend it for others? Grow in us, Lord, a desire to spend it for others so that when we are with you, you will respond to us how you did the faithful servants. Well done, my good and faithful servant. Enter into my joy. That's what we want, God. It's not easy. We need help. So help us, minister to us now, convict us if that's what we need, encourage us if we've been doing this well. Speak to us, Lord. We love you. Amen.